I'm Veronica Dudo. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, round three. Talks begin again, seeking peace between Ukraine and Russia, but there's one holdup stalling all progress. Heading to the polls, although it's February, early voting has already begun in some states. What it could tell us about the midterm elections.
I'm here at Santa Sabina in Rome, where Pope Leo has celebrated Ash Wednesday Mass. I'll take you inside and show you the solemn beginning of the church's Lenten journey.
These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on this Ash Wednesday, the start of the season of Lent. Our top story tonight, the United States holds a third set of talks with Ukraine and Russia seeking a path forward to end the war in Ukraine. But the meeting in Switzerland did not appear to yield any breakthroughs. Both sides remain entrenched in a dispute over territory. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
Veronica, next week marks the fourth anniversary of the war in Ukraine. Now, the U.S. has been trying to broker a peace deal. But after today's negotiations, both sides describe the discussions as difficult.
U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff still offers hope that talks to end the war in Ukraine will make a difference. Writing, President Trump's success in bringing both sides of this war together has brought about meaningful progress, and we are proud to work under his leadership to stop the killing in this terrible conflict. Witkoff adds, both parties agreed to update their respective leaders and continue working towards a deal. A Ukrainian negotiator insists his country is committed to peace.
There is progress, but no details can be disclosed at this stage. Ukraine remains constructive. The ultimate objective is unchanged, a just and sustainable peace.
President Volodymyr Zelensky did not attend the talks, but he later wrote, "We are working together with the team to bring real peace closer. The priority is security guarantees for Ukraine." Russia describes the talks as difficult but businesslike. Meanwhile, it continues attacking Ukraine with drones and missiles. Tuesday strikes killed a woman and injured two children. And in the White House press briefing room today, Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt provides this update.
There will be another round of talks in the future, but I think the president views this entire situation as very unfair, not just for Russians and Ukrainians who have lost their lives, but also for the American people and the American taxpayer who were footing the bill for this war effort.
Karoline Leavitt also called it deeply unfortunate that the Vatican will not be joining President Trump's Board of Peace, which, by the way, meets in Washington, D.C. tomorrow. The president wants his Board of Peace to solve global conflicts. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Recently, I had a chance to sit down with the Bishop Vitaly Krivitsky of the Kyiv Zhytomyr Diocese. He says Ukrainians are maintaining hope even when diplomatic efforts appear to stall.
We've learned during this time of war to hope even when there's no hope. We see that many times that there's been deals that they've tried to do, nothing comes out of them. But we do hope at the same time that these deals that are trying to be done, that they will bring some good outcome. We stopped asking ourselves, when is this all going to end? We just do what we have to do. So we pray for those that a lot depends on them for us to achieve a just peace. We pray for enemies, for their conversion. This is also a part of victory.
The Diocese of Knoxville announced today the passing of retired Bishop Richard Sticca at the age of 68. He served as the third bishop of Knoxville. Bishop Sticca had led the Diocese of Knoxville from 2009 to 2023. He resigned after a Vatican investigation into alleged mismanagement and mishandling of sex abuse claims. The cause of death was not immediately announced, but he had dealt with chronic health problems. The diocese is asking the faithful to pray for the repose of his soul. The 2026 midterm elections are officially underway. Early voting has started in several states, with March primaries set to begin in less than 2 weeks. These primaries could provide a preview of who controls the U.S. House and Senate next year. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now. Eric, are lawmakers now in election mode?
They are, Veronica. Good evening to you. We're just over a year into President Trump's term, and it's hard to believe that We've already started talking about the process of electing a new Congress, but campaigns are spending millions of dollars just on primaries, which will determine candidates in the November midterms. Democrats say that they have the upper hand, citing big wins in special elections and at the state level by large margins in areas that President Trump easily won in 2024.
Republicans continue to be destroyed electorally. Literally, Democrats, since January of 2025, haven't lost a single competitive election.
Early voting for March 3rd primaries include Arkansas. Early voting began February 16th. North Carolina, in-person early voting runs February 19th through the 28th. And Texas, early voting began February 17th. Right now, Texas's Senate race is ground zero for both parties. Senator John Cornyn is trying to survive a primary challenge from Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. And Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett is running in the Democrat primary against Texas State Representative James Tallarico. House Speaker Mike Johnson says he's excited for the outcome.
I'm absolutely delighted that Jasmine Crockett is running for Senate in Texas. I think it's one of the greatest things that's happened to the Republican Party in a long, long time. She is the face of the Democratic Party, she and Mamdani. Good luck with that.
He's like, oh, another Mamdani. I'm like, I'm sorry. He became the mayor over the president's choice. I mean, I'm good with becoming the senator.
Spending on the Texas Senate race is nearing record levels with total ad buys at almost $100 million. Republicans have poured over $72 million into Senator Cornyn's reelection bid just on the primary alone. Republicans believe that they have the resources to get him reelected.
But I don't take any of these elections lightly. I think what happened in Texas should be a, you know, it's something that ought to capture our attention and help us remind us that we need to up our game.
And the Texas race is getting ugly. Republican Congressman Wesley Hunt, who is also running for Senate, has filed police charges accusing Senator John Cornyn's campaign of doxing him, claiming that they posted the last four digits of his Social Security number, driver's license ID number, and home address on social media. And there are also tight Senate races elsewhere, like Maine and North Carolina. But if Republicans lose Texas, it could be the beginning of the end to not having the majority in the Senate. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
The Food and Drug Administration says it will now review a new mRNA flu vaccine by Moderna after previously refusing to do so. The FDA had cited concerns over the testing procedures of the new vaccine, saying the trial didn't reflect the best care at the time of the study. Moderna says they discussed a new regulatory approach with the FDA, but noted the concerns weren't about the safety or efficacy of the vaccine. If approved, Moderna hopes to make the shot available to those ages 50 and older for the upcoming flu season. Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg took the stand in a landmark trial today in Los Angeles. A woman and her mother have filed a lawsuit claiming that Instagram and YouTube were purposefully designed to make young users addicted. The woman, who is now 20, says she became addicted as a child and it harmed her mental health. There are more than 1,500 similar lawsuits, but this is the first to go to trial. Here to break it all down for us is Oz Sultan, the chief strategist with the Sultan Interactive Group. Oz, thanks so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me. The big issues and the big issues of contention here are sort of threefold. Number one, we've got challenges with the platform and what they've actually done over the course of the past 15 years in really coercing young kids. Two is the addictive algorithms that they've had in place. And three is the removal of, I guess you would call it, safety and privacy groups within the Meta group of companies that had overseen issues, as well as issues that have been kicked to the wayside by Meta executives. So, you know, the challenge that Meta is going to have here is multifold in proving that they didn't try to do these things. There's also going to be digging into, I think, corporate emails about what Meta was actually doing to prevent or protect children online.
Now, Mark Zuckerberg is personally testifying before a jury in this case. How significant is that? And what message does it send legally and perhaps culturally about accountability at the highest level of tech companies?
legally, it sets a tremendous precedent. We're now seeing that the actions of these companies that affect, you know, hundreds of millions, if not billions of users in some cases, can have some serious ramifications. And it sets the stage for punitive damages, which could be monetary. They could be reductions in terms of the services that could be offered. Could be a variety of different things that come. And then this stands to set some interesting case law future forward for not just what will happen inside of this year, but also how these platforms will be allowed to operate with children moving forward.
For years, tech companies have relied on Section 230 as a shield against liability. Could this case redefine the boundaries of Section 230, especially when the allegations focus not just on user content, but on platform design itself?
It's going to be a mixture of questions about platform design as well as, I think, user security and user stability. And it is also going to change. The outcomes of this case are going to change two things: how these platforms work, how these platforms are designed, and then lastly, how consumers interact with these platforms. So the outcomes of this stand to be pretty significant. The potential punitive damages stand to be significant. And this also will set some very, very significant case law for additional cases across the country and potentially across the globe.
Now, it took until 2026. Are you surprised that it has taken this long?
It's, you know, we've had conversations with Meta Security going back 15 years where they weren't taking things seriously in terms of, you know, issues of human trafficking or children being abused or, you know, other issues that just kind of come up from bullying and whatnot. My daughter has a bill that she's advancing in Pennsylvania for anti-bullying. You know, so these things are serious, serious concerns that children have had to face for now two generations, if not almost three generations, the lower part of millennials, Generation Z, and now Generation Alpha. So the potential ramifications of this are very significant, not just to Facebook, but to ByteDance, other players inside of the market. And also, what does social media mean inside of the context where it has to be highly regulated?
Now, there's so many conversations about where the onus should lie, whether it's the user, the parents, the tech company. How do you see all of this?
I think it's a mixture of the parent and the tech company. The platform should be incumbent to provide safety and security for their users. The parents should be responsible for the oversight of their children. But when the platforms are violating a tremendous amount of things, as we've seen with Roblox, as we've seen with other platforms where nefarious actors can get access to children, there have to be regulatory guidelines put in place above and beyond COPPA and above and beyond what we currently have in place that wasn't really set for this whole boom of social media that happened over the course of the past 15 years.
Sultan, great to see you, and thanks for joining us from the White House.
Thank you for having me.
We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly. Natural disaster and a major avalanche turns deadly in California. We have the latest. We hear from the Augustine Institute about a new prayer initiative launching for Lent. Authorities say crews found the bodies of eight skiers in what they now call the deadliest avalanche in modern California history. One person remains missing and is presumed dead. The skiers were part of a group of 15, including four guides, on a three-day backcountry expedition in a popular recreational area near Castle Peak. Search and rescue crews were dispatched after a 911 call on Tuesday morning. Six other skiers who managed to survive the avalanche have been found. At least four people are dead and dozens more injured after a massive pileup on Interstate 25 south of Pueblo, Colorado. Authorities say the incident happened on Tuesday and involved more than 30 vehicles. Officials say dirt kicked up by heavy winds caused a brownout and made it nearly impossible to see. Strong winds also brought multiple fires to the plains. In northwestern Oklahoma, a wildfire in Woodward forced at least 3,000 people to evacuate. Another fire in Beaver County rapidly crossed north into Kansas in just hours. Authorities say it exploded to an estimated 145,000 acres by Tuesday evening. The United States Capitol Police arrested an 18-year-old man after he charged the Capitol with a loaded shotgun. Carter Camacho of the state of Georgia complied with Capitol Police orders, leaving no one hurt. His vehicle was found nearby with a gas mask and helmet inside. Officials are still searching for a motive and say Camacho was not on file with the United States Capitol Police. It's Ash Wednesday, which marks the start of Lent. It's a time for the faithful to examine what separates us from the Lord and to remove those things out of our lives in order to grow closer to Christ. The Augustine Institute is here to help thanks to the launch of Heart of Prayer Lenten Series. It's designed to explore the beauty and power of a deeply lived prayer life. Joining us now is Dr. Scott Heffelfinger, an associate professor at the Augustine Institute Graduate School of Theology. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, first, can you tell us about Heart of Prayer and how the Lenten collaboration with the National Eucharistic Congress came about?
Sure. Yeah, Heart of Prayer is a new video series that we have. It has 8 episodes featuring Bishop Andrew Cousins, who guides us through a study on prayer. And the way I think about it is it's almost like your own personal retreat with a retreat master who's very wise, practical, and gentle. So a beautiful opportunity here. We've been collaborating with the National Eucharistic Congress for a while, and they had the idea of doing a series on prayer, and we wanted to make it happen. We turned it into a beautiful retreat for guests. And then we wanted to open up that retreat to the world with this new video series that we have, which also has an accompanying digital download, a study guide to take you through this study on prayer.
Now, as you mentioned, the series is hosted by Bishop Andrew Cousins of the Diocese of Crookston, Minnesota. Now, he says that the greatest love and peace can be found in prayer. How will the series help us develop our prayer lives, especially during this time?
Yeah, so it's a great connection for me. It was about 25 years ago, actually, that Father Andrew Cousins taught me something about prayer when I began a year of serving with NET Ministries. And here we are 25 years later, he is teaching us about prayer. And I think some of the beautiful ways that this can help us is, in his wisdom, he unifies the teaching of Scripture with his own personal experience and the experience and teaching of the saints on prayer. And so we can take that in as participants and learn from these great sources. And he meets us wherever we're at in prayer, and it's very practical in that it deals with our emotions and the sufferings that we might experience and how to integrate this into a life of prayer. And so out of the many resources out there on prayer, this one is particularly holistic, considering so many aspects of the human person, so that this Lent we can really delve into prayer and draw closer to the Lord in this way.
And can you just expand a little bit on that point? Why is it so important to participate in this series during the season of Lent?
Well, one of the three pillars of our Lenten practice is prayer. So we're familiar with prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. And prayer has such a central place. It's actually the primary one of these three practices. And so the season of Lent is a time to recommit to prayer, and to have Bishop Cousins as a personal guide is a way to enrich our own lives of prayer, and through that to draw closer to Christ, which is what we want to do in the season of Advent. So it's a beautiful resource for teaching us about prayer, for uniting ourselves to the Lord, especially in this time of the church's year dedicated to prayer.
Dr. Scott Heffelfinger, thank you so much for sharing more about this with us.
Thank you for having me.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, In Need of Repair, what Pope Leo says is the key to broken humanity during his Ash Wednesday audience. Plus, the pontiff partakes in a centuries-old tradition to kick off the Lenten season. Illinois, 3,000 people are expected to join Chicago Archbishop Cardinal Blaise Supich for an outdoor Ash Wednesday Mass. Afterward, a procession to the Broadview Detention Center is planned. It comes after a federal judge issued an order in favor of the Coalition for Spiritual and Public Leadership, a nonprofit that helps facilitate Catholic services at ICE facilities, among other initiatives. The detention center gained attention during the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Operation Midway Blitz, aimed at arresting arresting illegal immigrants with criminal records. Clergy will be allowed to administer ashes and communion to detainees. Today, Pope Leo embarked on the pilgrimage of the Aventine Hill in Rome for Ash Wednesday. He marked the start of Lent with the historic procession. EWTN News Vatican correspondent Valentina Di Donato has that story.
For centuries, the Aventine Hill, where we are now, has served as a place of Christian prayer. And today, its streets are filled for Ash Wednesday. Pope Leo XIV began his first Lenten journey as successor of Peter, walking together with cardinals, Benedictine monks, and Dominican friars taking part in an ancient Roman tradition, the penitential procession from the Basilica of Sant'Anselmo to the Basilica of Santa Sabina, where the Mass took place. During his homily, the Holy Father spoke of how Lent remains a powerful time for community.
We know that it has become increasingly difficult to gather people together and make them feel like a community, not in a nationalistic and aggressive way, but in a communion where each of us finds our place.
And it is during this season, says the Holy Father, that we must look at ourselves soberly and acknowledge the weaknesses in our souls.
Indeed, during Lent, a people is formed that recognizes its sins. These sins are evils that have not come from supposed enemies, but afflict our hearts and exist within us. We need to respond by courageously accepting responsibility for them.
Ash Wednesday also marks the beginning of the ancient station church's pilgrimage, where the faithful can attend Mass at a different church each day during Lent.
The ancient Roman tradition of the Lenten stations, which begins today with the first station, is instructive. It refers both to moving as pilgrims and to stopping, statio, at the memories of the martyrs, on which stand the basilicas of Rome. Is this not perhaps an invitation to follow in the footsteps of the admirable witnesses to the faith who can now be found throughout the world? Let us remember the places, stories, and names of those who have chosen the way of the Beatitudes and live them out to the end.
It's a tradition that reaches back to the 4th century, but was revived by Pope John XXIII in 1959. In Rome, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
Before celebrating Mass at Santa Sabina, Pope Leo held his weekly general audience. He reminded Christians that the Church is always a sign of reconciliation in the midst of a fragmented humanity.
La Chiesa è il mistero reso percepibile.
The Holy Father explained how the Church is God's instrument for uniting people to himself and to one another. The Pope also emphasized how the condition of humanity is one of fragmentation that human beings are unable to repair. In this condition, the Holy Father added, Jesus Christ intervenes, overcoming the forces of division. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, YouTube, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Veronica Dudo. Good night, and God bless.